Good afternoon. Paul is noticing that I am feeling a little more enthusiastic and vital than he is in this heat. The best air conditioning is a connection with your guide. Okay, to repeat, in the Sparkly Book, it's page 162, last paragraph. In the second edition, it's page 129, second full paragraph, paragraph number 10. And in the first edition, it's the second line from the bottom of the page on page 119. And without preamble, we'll go right into the book. You are the will of God. Do not accept anything else as your will, or you are denying what you are. Tell me something. During the last 7 days, how many minutes did you spend being aware that you are the will of God? I'm not going to force you to convict yourselves by answering the question, but if that's not what you were identifying yourself as you went through your week, then during your week you were denying what you are. You were in a state of self-denial. A kinder way of putting it is that you were in a state of unconsciousness of your identity. And if you are unconscious of who or what you are, it's impossible for you to express it. It's a simple thing we've been talking about over the past few weeks. Singularity. And I want it to register with you as something simple. You hang on dearly to your concept of being a human being, your father's and mother's son or daughter, your children's parent, of a human being, of a physical organism who's arrogant enough to think it's at the top of the food chain. You see? And when that's the way you identify yourself, you leave out the best part. You leave out the excellence of you. You leave out the goodness, the godness of you. And so what it boils down to is something very simple. Let yourself during this coming week be as conscious as you can of the fact that you are more than your current definitions of yourself, that you are in actuality the direct expression and presence of God in the middle of the direct expression of God. You call it the world and universe. It is the kingdom of heaven. It is reality with a capital R, the ultimate. You think it's arrogant to say, if there's anything here at all where I see myself, it must be God presenting himself. It may seem arrogant to you to do that, but that is the simple truth. And as a result, as I've been saying, there is an excellence present. You are the presence of excellence. And there's much more for you to give, to share, than you imagine, or than you embrace in your current human definition of yourself. You've got to dare to identify yourself correctly. Who to yourself first. Because until you're willing to embrace it, you can't incorporate it. You can't let it in to register and settle with you and become the more of you that you're capable of being, that you will then be able to extend and share, not as a sharing of arrogance, but of simple and genuine value that's meaningful to everyone in your experience. As I've said before, you're all closet Christs, embarrassed and ashamed to present who you really are. And it's time to come out of the closet. And the only way you'll come out of the closet is to begin to remember in your mind who you are and let it occupy more of your attention. That's what this is all about. Again, you are the will of God. Do not accept anything else as your will, or you are denying what you are. Deny this, and you will attack, believing you have been attacked. But see the love of God in you, and you will see it everywhere, because it is everywhere. And this is me. It is the only thing really going on. Continuing, see His, God's, abundance in everyone, and you will know that you are in Him, with Him. In other words, the acknowledgement of what is true about a brother in your mind causes what you see in him to be confirmed in you, and you are blessed. They are part of you, as you are part of God. You are as lonely without understanding this as God Himself is lonely when His sons do not know Him. The peace of God is understanding this. There is only one way out of the world's thinking, just as there was only one way into it. Understand totally by understanding totality. Totality. Infiniteness, that is wholeness. That is a singularity, in other words. I have Paul on the edge of his seat. We're going somewhere he has no sense of. How does what I've just read relate to the specific human experience of your having to relate to someone who is unconscious of the truth of themselves, and who insist upon acting out defense when there is really nothing going on calling for defense, so that their behavior with you is obtuse, unpleasant, unkind, without a cause. In other words, when someone is so unpleasant to be with, that being with them and with their behavior constitutes such a distraction to you because it is so unpleasant, that it is not possible to continue to be in their presence where you could be an active agent for change, where you could be the presence of love that heals. Even more than this, what if this unpleasant someone, this well-defended someone, who doesn't see that their behavior is an unpleasant experience for others? What if they know that you have a commitment to the prayer, I wish to see only the evidence of love, and I wish to be only the evidence of love? What if this person knows that you have a commitment to this, and although they don't see in what way their behavior is unpleasant, they know that you are experiencing it as unpleasant, and they don't stop because they know you have a commitment to be defenseless? Do you stand there in the hurricane of their behavior and not object to it, but instead express the truth about them? Or do you say to them, until you put the brakes on with this behavior, until you can settle down and stop being unpleasant, you will have to leave. Until you exert a little self-discipline and self-control, so that I am not having to dodge the bullets that you are sending my way, we are not in a position to communicate, and you can't remain. Does your opting for the opportunity to be the presence of singularity in the face of attack, something you are supposed to engage in without objection to the setting, the circumstance in which it's occurring? Well, I will tell you something. There is a way things work. And the way things work is full of integrity, and it is full of kindness, and I will give you an example. If any one of you is angry, defensive, pissed off, and you want to talk to your guide, and it may be you're pissed off at your guide because your guide has been pushing your buttons, encouraging you to expand beyond your comfort zone, and you approach your guide full of emotion, vigor, criticism, judgment, you will not be able to hear your guide. Why? Not because your guide won't speak to you, but because the willfulness that you are bringing into play in the process of approaching your guide, in so many words, makes so much static in your mind that you will not hear the answer. And you will not hear the answer until you bring into play a certain amount of self-discipline and you settle yourself down. And you arrive at a point where, still not having the answer to the thing that was frustrating you, you're willing to release the emotion because you know it's getting in the way. And you choose to set it aside, even though it is of extreme importance to you to be able to express it, so that you can go into the silence where you can hear the answer. Now, let's say that you are one of those who has said, I wish to see only the evidence of love, and I wish to be only the evidence of love. And you have made commitment to that, and someone else knows it, just like Paul knows, that I will never stop being here for him, and I will never become upset by his behavior, and I will always respond. And yet, this one insists upon acting out their sense of separateness, vulnerability, and the need for defense that they feel, and they insist upon doing it most obtusely. You might feel that you must answer, that you must be the presence of love in that environment without objection. And you would be wrong. And this is important for you to know. You must. It's absolutely necessary for you to say no to that kind of environmental circumstance. And you must tell them that they must leave if they're not going to stop. And they cannot come back until they've gotten hold of themselves and are willing to go into their peace and choose for it, so that healing of the disturbance can be addressed, rather than protection from the disturbance needing to be employed. The behavior is a call for correction, right? You've been hearing this ever since we started reading the Course. The behavior, the loveless behavior, is a call for love. It is a call for correction. And the first part of the correction involves modifying the way the call is being made, so that the call for correction has a little more love in it, a little less lovelessness in it. Now then, you're in a position of having to wait until that one has come to the point of saying, okay, it's less important to me to be able to express my upsetness. It's less important to me. That is less important to me than being in the place where a relationship can occur that allows for healing to happen. And that may be months. It may be years. Well, now, that seems to take you out of the loop as far as your function is concerned, because your function is to be the presence of love, to be that singularity that heals. And now the setup is, by virtue of your objecting to the uninhibited expression of anger or defense, you're not in a position of relating to them in a healing way. Well, you're not out of the loop, because you've still got your own mind in which to be clear and in which to be the presence of clarity that gets extended. In metaphysics, there's such a thing as something that is called absent treatment. It is where healing work is done and you're not in the presence of the one who has asked for healing. And so you have the opportunity in your mind, whenever this individual comes to your attention, to ask God to turn toward the Holy Spirit, to go within to that place of excellence in you, to ask, what is the truth about this one? Not what is the truth about his or her bad behavior, but what is the God's honest truth about him or her. Because you want your mind filled with the consciousness of the truth about them, so that you are not conflicted, and so that every time you think about them, you are sending out messengers that will bring back confirmation of the truth of them to you. It is important to understand this, else you end up being the victim or victims of abuse. And you end up being the victims of abuse because you have an unintelligent concept of what it means to be the presence of love. You're supposed to stand there and turn the other cheek when one cheek has been slapped. No. When lovelessness is expressed, you don't give lovelessness another opportunity to be expressed. You don't come back from the ego place that the slap came from. You come from the other vantage point. You come from the other voice, the voice for truth. And you say, no. This behavior is unacceptable. The truth that you need to hear right now is that you cannot continue this behavior in my presence, and until this behavior stops, we have no basis for resolving whatever the distress is that's causing you to behave this way. That is turning the other cheek. It's coming back from the other voice, coming back from the place of excellence in you that honors them enough to say, I will not give you permission when you're with me to behave in a way that doesn't reflect the truth about you. And at the same time, I respect and honor what's true about me enough not to join with you in your attitude and retaliate. Let's continue. Perceive any part of the ego's thought system as wholly insane, wholly delusional, and wholly undesirable, and you have correctly evaluated all of it. This correction enables you to perceive any part of creation as wholly real. Any part of it, even if it's just the rose, even if it's just your fingernail. This correction enables you to perceive any part of creation as wholly real, wholly perfect, and wholly desirable. Wanting this only, you will have this only, and giving this only, you will be only this. In other words, your mind will be in a condition of singularity, which is its normal state, its only state. The gifts you offer to the ego are always experienced as sacrifices, but the gifts you offer to the kingdom are gifts to you. They will always be treasured by God because they belong to his beloved sons who belong to him. Why? Because existence, the conscious experience of being, mind, is singular. All power and glory are yours because the kingdom is his. And so the question comes, well, why can't I demonstrate this? Why with this particular individual or that particular individual can't I do something to aggressively change the situation? aggressively, lovingly, transformingly heal the situation. And the simple reason is that you cannot make anyone, you cannot make anyone use their will in a way that is contrary to their current choice. And so until their current choice changes, you must say no. You cannot behave with me that way. You will have to go find others who will accept it. Well, but it's your son or your daughter or your parent or your best friend. How can you just break it off? Their family or their loved ones. Well, I'm going to tell you something. You've got to pay attention to your common sense. And if being with them causes only discomfort and nothing, no matter how loving you are, they will not change their behavior, you must ask yourself whether it is intelligent for you to remain in a situation where conflict is being employed consciously and purposely, and be without your peace. And you must finally come to the point where you answer, no, I refuse to be in the thick of battle where it is so noisy that I cannot experience my peace. And you must withdraw, as I did, to a mountaintop. You must withdraw from where you are being thronged by the crowds, by the dynamics, so that you may choose for your peace and find it. Now, I'm going to ask another question. You, who might be having situations like this, and all of you are to one degree or another, why are you picking on the one or two or three individuals who are insisting upon being hateful and being preoccupied by your inability to change them when you have 100 others in your experience with whom you can dialogue and communicate and grow together? What is your addiction to what you see as a call for help that you know is not genuine? What I mean by that is that although at the bottom line every call for help is a call for help, there are those who are calling for help because they're getting a hit from being unpleasant. They are getting a feeling of power, which they are consciously choosing to employ because they know it's upsetting and they want to see you squirm. And they have no intent of letting you off the hook so that you can stop squirming. Why do you have an addiction to trying to change them? And what I'm trying to point out to you is that the practical fact is that there will be not enough defenselessness for there to be a joining and a blending of the two of you where communication can occur. And you must wait until they open up and are willing to let someone in, and they are willing to Stop this behavior, at least with you. If they know that you have a commitment to being the evidence of love, and they think that that means that you should stand there in the face of their ongoing attack that has as its purpose to make you uncomfortable so that they can watch you squirm, they must learn something about what it means for you to wish to be only the evidence of love. Because wishing to be the evidence of love and being the evidence of love will never involve your saying okay to that kind of behavior. If you say okay to that kind of behavior, you're presenting no call for correction on their part. And so, the first part of your expressing love and being the evidence of love is to say no to the behavior, absolutely. And that until the behavior changes, there can be no active relationship. Then they will be faced with the fact that they must recognize that they must change their behavior. Just as when you're reaching out to God in anger and frustration, whether it's at God or whether it's at a brother or sister, you will have to arrive at a point where, after having received no answer, that you decide to settle down your willfulness and your projection of hate so that there's enough peace and quiet within you to hear God's answer, where there's enough absence of willfulness that the will of God can register with you. And every single one of you has to come to this point. Every one of you has to come to the point of yielding to God. And that always involves yielding up your so-called right to an independent expression of willfulness. Now, if that's the only way you can approach God, that's the only way your brother or sister can approach God that is finding expression through you. Well, that feels really hard-nosed. Oh, this is the tough love, I see. I understand. No, it's not tough love. It's just simple intelligence. And it is a matter of coming to a realization within yourself that there really is a way that things work. No little private separate egos are making up rules of any sort, even though that's what egos busy themselves with. There is a divine order to things. I'm sorry, mind is a singularity. And you know what that means? It means that no matter how hard you try to be fragmented, you can't succeed. Because that's the way it works. And so if you want to experience connection with God, with the Holy Spirit, with your guide, with the place of excellence in you, so that you're feeling it and experiencing it and inspired by it and enlarged in your awareness of what you are by it, you must abandon your insistence upon being some sort of really unique and interesting, complex, fragmented presence. Is that clear? Does that make sense? Why? Because that's the way it works. You must cooperate with the way things are. And there is a larger context than the infrastructure of private, defensive thoughts and concepts that you have all developed. And that larger context is your home. Now, let's continue. The next section is called The Defense of Conflict. We once said that without projection, there can be no anger. But it is also true that without projection, there can be no love. Listen to this. Projection is a fundamental law of the mind, and therefore one which always operates. How many of you thought the word projection was a dirty word? But it is a fundamental law of the mind, and therefore one which always operates. It is the law by which you create and were created. It is the law, projection is, the law which unifies the kingdom and keeps it in the mind of God. To the ego, the law of projection is perceived as a way of getting rid of something it does not want. So it projects it out there as though it's not its own. It gets rid of it. But, I'm adding the word but, to the Holy Spirit, it, projection, is the fundamental law of sharing, by which you give what you value in order to keep it in your own mind. Projection to the Holy Spirit is the law of extension. To the ego, it is the law of deprivation. It, the law of projection, therefore produces abundance or scarcity, depending on how you choose to apply it. This choice is up to you. But it is not up to you to decide whether or not you will utilize projection. Every mind must project, because that is how it lives, and every mind is life. The ego's use of projection must be fully understood before its inevitable association between projection and anger can be finally undone. Now listen to this. The ego always tries to preserve conflict. It is very ingenious in devising ways which seem to diminish conflict, because it does not want you to find conflict so intolerable that you will insist on giving it up. Therefore, the ego tries to persuade you that it can free you of conflict, lest you give the ego up and free yourself. How many times during the week might you find yourself in a position or a situation that calls for correction, and you say, I know what to do about this. My experience tells me that if I do this and that and the other thing, I will be able to move things in a new direction. Somebody says, did you check in with your guide? Oh, I can handle this one. That'll take too long. I can handle this one. The ego says, I can handle this one. I can free you of conflict, lest you give me up and free yourself. You get it? The ego tries to persuade you that it can free you of conflict, lest you give the ego up and free yourself. The ego, using its own warped version of the laws of God, you see, there's the singularity again. There are no other laws to use. There's no other reality to be in. You're in the kingdom of heaven, which is governed by the laws of God, and you're either experiencing it truly, or you're experiencing it through the lens of the definitions you have made up about it. But because mind is singular, you will be using the laws, the only laws there are, to accomplish or to seem to accomplish what you're doing. And because the laws of being serve to support being in its infinite singularity without conflict in it, every attempt you make to do something unintelligent will have an unintelligent result. Every impossible thing you attempt to do will never be done. And so when you're trying to operate on your own, every experience will be a failure of one sort or another. Why? Because mind is a singularity, and therefore the intent set into motion by virtue of sharing or extension is going to bear identical fruit. The fruit will reflect perfectly the intent, because mind is a singularity, and the intent to do something impossible will bear the fruit of failure. And the intent to be what you are not will be uncomfortable. To do what is not natural and which is therefore impossible will provide you with an experience that identifies its unnaturalness and its impossibility. And you call that suffering. And you call it the human condition. And your ego says, it can free you of this. When what needs to happen is you need to abandon the ego's vantage point. You need to abandon attempting to do the impossible. You need to stop using the laws of God to demonstrate that you can't succeed at using them improperly. Again, the ego, using its own warped version of the laws of God, utilizes the power of the mind only to defeat the mind's real purpose. It projects conflict from your mind to other minds. They did it. It's their fault. I wouldn't be having so much trouble if they weren't doing blah, 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 blah. It projects conflict from your mind to other minds in an attempt to persuade you that you have gotten rid of it. It's their fault, not my problem. I didn't cause it. They're the cause of it. But remember, we talked last week about the fact that, yes, you did cause it. You caused it by first of all saying, Father, I'd rather see it my way. You didn't value the Father's way of experiencing the kingdom of heaven as the kingdom of heaven. You said, I'd rather experience it as something else. But then you don't want to own, take responsibility for the way you're experiencing the kingdom of heaven, so you do the only thing that you can do, because being is a matter of projecting. You project the cause of your suffering out there. Why? So that you can be squeaky clean. You innocent little bastard, you. And the word bastard is not a dirty word. It's truth, because you have gotten a bill of divorcement, haven't you? Parentless, fatherless, motherless. See, you thought it was so great to be asserting some self-authority, and you turned yourself into a bastard. You didn't expect it. And you don't want to acknowledge it either. So now everyone else is the bastard. And now it's a dirty word. They are a bastard. This has several fallacies which may not be so apparent. Strictly speaking, conflict cannot be projected precisely because it cannot be fully shared. The intent is to do something impossible, and so you can't succeed. Why? Because using the laws of God, which are singular, in an infinite environment which is singular, the attempt to do the impossible is impossible. Now, there's just pure and simple logic. Any attempt to keep part of it and get rid of another part does not really mean anything. Why? Because you can't fragment or divide a singularity that is absolute and unchangeable. You just can't. You might fool yourself into believing that you have, and that's called the human condition, but you can't do it. Continuing, remember that a conflicted teacher is a poor teacher and a poor learner. His lessons are confused, and their transfer value is severely limited by his confusion. A second fallacy is the idea that you can get rid of something you do not want by giving it away. Now, I'm going to add these words. Because the laws of God are singular, and because being is singular, and because mind is singular, giving it, now I'm reading, giving it is how you keep it. That's just the way it works. So, in your ignorance, thinking you are a private, separate little mind, with rights of your own and authority of your own, you think that if you have something that you don't want and you give it away, you will no longer have it. And you're dead wrong. Because the moment you give something away, you have it. That's the law of singularity. Continuing, the belief that by giving it out, you have excluded it from within, is a complete distortion of the power of extension. That is why those who project from the ego, and you all know who they are, right? You. That is why those who project from the ego are vigilant for their own safety. They are afraid that their projections will return and hurt them. They do believe they have blotted their projections from their own minds, but they also believe their projections are trying to creep back into them. That is because the projections have not left their minds, and this in turn forces them to engage in compulsive activity in order not to recognize this. Is that insanity or what? You cannot perpetuate an illusion about another without perpetuating it about yourself. There is no way out of this. Why? Because it is impossible to fragment your mind. Why is it impossible to fragment your mind? Because mind is a singularity. Always has been, always will be, is now, because there's no other condition of the existence of mind available. Now, I've got to return to this sticky little subject about other people's behavior and how you respond. Because this sentence can be used as a basis for your staying in a situation of continuing to be abused. Here it is. You cannot perpetuate an illusion about another without perpetuating it about yourself. And the ego wants to come in and say, Well, if I'm saying that their behavior is unacceptable and they cannot behave that way in my presence, am I not creating a picture that is untrue about them and projecting it on them and thereby making it true about me? And is not the whole process one that continues the illusion, the problem, rather than healing it? Is anybody not understanding me? Well, if you are, just rewind the tape and listen to what I just said over again. I'm not going to repeat it right now. When you say to another, we cannot continue this involvement until you're willing to modify your behavior, until you're willing to exercise a little self-control and stop behaving in such an obtuse way. If you are going to say that to someone, it is not to say they are bad. It is not to say they are wrong. It is not a judgment. It is an observation of behavior that they are engaging in consciously, on purpose. And you are saying, I will not join with you in agreeing with you that this behavior represents what is true about you. And so I will not let this false presentation continue in my presence. I will not honor its expression in my presence because I know the truth about you. And until you're willing to express a little bit more of it with me, sayonara. I honor the integrity of your being too much to allow you to cover it up with this behavior and expect me to accept it. That is love, because it doesn't honor something in them that they want you to honor. And they want you to honor their right to be themselves in any fashion that they choose, whether it's loving or loveless. And you must say no. And when you say no, it doesn't mean they're a bad person. It doesn't mean that you have a negative concept about them. It says that you respect what's true about them too much to allow them to present themselves this way and expect you to believe that that's them and accept that it is them. You won't do it. You cannot, I'm repeating, you cannot perpetuate an illusion about another without perpetuating it about yourself. And if you stand without objection in the presence of another who is being insane and wanting you to accept their insanity as the truth about them, you must say no. Because if you do agree with them and you agree with their right to behave in a way that doesn't reflect what's real about them, you are then agreeing that an illusion is real, and you are confirming it in them, and you are thereby, because mind is singular, confirming it about yourself. Does that make sense? Do you see that? Good. If nothing else has been made clear today, that is a major step forward. And we are going to end there. I know that the idea of singularity has been difficult to grasp the meaning of, and I know that I have been very repetitive, but it's because it's so essential to understand, and it's because it is such a simplicity that if you don't get it in its simplicity, whatever we read from now on is going to seem complex. And you will think that waking up is a complex thing when it's not. Can't we get on to something fresh and new and stimulating? Don't worry, we will. We will. I love you all, and I look forward to being with you next week. Thank you.